Hi, ladies.
How are you?
How are you, Rita?
I'm Alan Kasuja, and the BBC is sending me back to school. A ladies' school.
Welcome to the first session of the IT Club.
It's all to learn about some of the remarkable young people who are changing Africa beyond recognition. And the first person I'm going to meet is right up there, teaching these young women all about computers. I'm told she's a very savvy lady.
Are you excited?
Yes.
I'm not seeing that.
Yes.
All right.
I'm Jessica Kwandi. I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm now into education. I'm building the information systems program at Akila, which is a female institute based in Rwanda.
Teaching young women to embrace technology, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Isn't that a man's world?
Not anymore. Rwanda intends to be the ICT hub of the region. We want to be like Silicon Valley. So teaching these young women technology is part of our country's vision.
Africa's changing fast. As I'm finding out in this series, My Africa, part of the BBC's Richer World season. My Africa is all about young people's vision for the future in my own native East Africa. If you ask 28-year-old Rwandan teacher Jessica Kwandi what her Africa will be like, she'll tell you that Rwanda's fate lies in the hands of its young females, some of whom are about to embark on her brand new computer programming course. And she'll also say, it will depend on looking outwards to the world.
We are a landlocked country, and we can't reach foreign countries if we are not using a network. So the only way we can reach those countries to attract them to invest in our country is to use information technology. So I'm teaching young women to embrace technology because we know that technology is the drive of our economy.
So, Jesse, what's going on here?
Students are just out for lunch. They'll be having lunch in the garden. It's very open because we encourage interaction. We like freedom.
Yeah. And what's the age group of these students?
18 to 22 generally.
Okay. Do you mind if we try to speak to some of them? Can I come and sit with you guys? Yeah? Great. My name is Alan. What's yours?
I'm Nina.
Nina. Yes. Talking to Jesse's students, it's soon clear that they also believe computing is a path to national renewal. They say it will make them more independent and even more democratic.
So when you're using technology, you are able to find out new things. You have your capacity to do on your own.
It will bring that concept of self-reliance. Nobody else is going to tell me what to think.
So, we are standing for president in our college, but I choose it on my own, as she did on her own.
Oh, so I'm sitting between two possible presidents.
Yeah.
So what is your company?
Empowerment means that the person is responsible of their own destiny. They make their own choices, and they have the opportunities to do whatever thing they want and to speak up. Those students, when they go home, they're going to be examples and leaders in their own communities. And some of them might build careers where they represent Africa. So what I give them is contributing at a global level.
I speak without shyness, and you have to have confidence.
You know, when you speak to me right now, I hear that you speak with a bit of a French accent. French is the language that you were brought up speaking, is that right?
Yeah, since primary school, secondary school, I used to speak French. So I'm Francophone, but also speak good English.
And I'm fascinated by this, Jesse, if I may come back to you, because you have a critical mass of people who speak both English and French. And I could almost say that that's unique to this region.
Yeah, that's true, that we were raised up speaking French, and then we have to switch to English. So, yeah, it's unique, but it's also advantageous for us because we are fluent.
When you think of Rwanda, you might think of the genocide in 1994, when up to 1 million people were slaughtered. But this recent move from speaking French to speaking English, along with the quest for global connections and the inclusion of females in the economy, shows the country is determined to break with the past. For Jesse, getting women online is a crucial part of that vision.
Akila had initially two courses, hospitality management and entrepreneurship. Now we are launching the information systems program, which is going to be very techy.
Right.
So they'll be sitting, writing code, building software, building mobile applications. And 80% of them didn't have access to a computer before.
80%?
Mm-hmm.
That's astonishing. So for many of them, it will be the first time they're ever using a computer.
Yes.
Of all of you in this class, how many of you can say that you are rich? Clap if you are rich. 3 out of 40? A poor family?
No.
Clap if you are not poor, but you are not rich. So majority of you come from not poor, not rich, somewhere in the middle.
Yes.
Okay, so your fathers had jobs, you had a car at home, right?
No.
Not poor, but still no car. Africans sometimes have their own ideas of what it means to be middle income. How many of you had computers at home? Clap if you did. How many of you did not have computers at home? It sounds like more did not have computers at home than those that did. And how many of you knew how to use computers very well? Nobody.
This is all part of the Vision 2020, the national plan. Vision 2020 is where we want to be in 2020. By that time, we want to be a middle-income country.
It seems wildly optimistic to take a small, poor, landlocked African country and build an affluent middle class. But Jesse speaks with the confidence of a scientist who knows her research is rock solid. And she has a further source of inspiration, which she took me to one morning.
Most people say that the sky is the limit. For me, it's not the limit. It's like the lower limit. And for me to be able to say such things is because I have faith in God.
Many scientists or techies will sort of have moved away from that.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in things they see, things that are real to them.
Mm-hmm.
How have you managed to keep your faith going despite your involvement in a radically different world?
You know, those things that are tangible, they come from something that you believe in. For example, for someone to create a software, they have imagined it. They know the impact that it will make. So that is a lower level of faith. But a higher level of faith is knowing that above all those things that you're doing, there's someone greater. And if you unite yourself with that someone greater, you will do greater things.
Talk to me about the Africa you see in the future. Tell me where you see these girls you're working so hard to empower fitting.
90% of them will be either owning successful businesses or having successful careers in the tech industry. I'm very optimistic because the generation that is coming up is very different from the generation that's ahead. The generation that's ahead is like the West. Please help us. Please feed us. But us, we're like, no, we are going to feed ourselves.
A critical mass of optimistic Africans.
Yeah. I think Rwanda will have a big middle class. An average family will earn enough money to pay the school fees of their children, to pay their health care, to have enough food on their table, and to save. Maybe they become sponsors for disadvantaged people, either in neighboring countries or in further countries.
You're so confident that the middle class in Rwanda will be that strong.
Exactly.
Now I'm starting to wonder if she's being completely unrealistic. At the moment, 2/3 of Rwanda's 11 million people live below the poverty line. But then again, we know that information technology has been revolutionary elsewhere in the world. Why not at least some of that benign revolution here? Also, amazing things can happen when individuals get the chance to become self-sufficient through, say, owning their own businesses.
10 years ago, you couldn't find a person who's below 25 who starts a company and employs people. But now they're rising like mushrooms.
And that can only result, I imagine, in many more people with a lot of cash to spare.
but also a lot of cash to invest.
And just to go back to your faith point, mm-hmm. the Bible says that it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this whole faith thing being eroded?
Actually, that scripture, people got it wrong.
Really?
God doesn't hate rich people. In fact, he loves rich people because they do his job. They feed the poor. So we have to get rich in order to partner with God.
Ha! That's funny, to partner with God. That's interesting. I never had that one used before.
Exactly. If you are a Christian and you meet a poor person, you say, oh God, I'm going to pray. That is not going to help that person. But if you have bread, give them that bread. That's a lot easier.
In fact, Jess's digital world is already helping to put bread on tables. Before she became a teacher, she developed an online guide to nightclubs and restaurants in the capital, Kigali. They are expanding rapidly, in part thanks to the app, helping turn Kigali into a happier, more prosperous place. Jesse introduced me to her friend and former business partner, a man called Charles, with whom she worked on the app.
So Charles, you're taking me out, and I'd like to go to a place where I can relax, have a cold drink, and eat some barbecued meat. So can we use your app to find such a place?
Yes, we can. You just go into your smartphone.
Right.
Then here is a list of all restaurants.
Okay, so it's in English, is it?
It's in English.
So what restaurant have you suggested we go to then?
We've picked the Lemon Tree. It's like 3 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that all? Let's go then. We're in a part of Kigali called Remera, which is not too far away from the airport, and there are very many restaurants in this area. Many lights outside, it's pretty lively here, and it seems like the beginning of what will be a very busy evening. So I imagine there's going to be a great demand for your app.
Yeah, we are trying to update our database every day, and it's a lot of demand from our side.
How old are you now?
24.
You must have seen many changes in Kigali over the last 24 years.
Things are changing in the whole Kigali. Even in this place that we are today, 12 years ago, it was only trees. But now you can see a lot of restaurants, as we've seen outside. New building, roads, schools, universities. Many things are happening in Kigali.
I wish that you could come back maybe next year. And yourself, you'll see the change. Because when I travel, when I come back, there's always something changing. I never get used to Kigali. I can spend a whole week at my workplace. When I go downtown, there's something that has changed. You know, it's a country that is very fast in development, but also in building its population, the values of the population.
We own our country and we want to change it. That's where some ladies getting involved in things of the country. We can see them in everything, in the technology, in the leadership, politics, which shows that every Rwandan is now feeling the movement of the country.
You sound very, very optimistic.
But why not? Why not the next Bill Gates, the next Melinda Gates, could not be Jesse or someone else?
As a visitor to the country, it's impressive to see how widely this kind of self-confidence is shared amongst the people of Rwanda. So many of them seem to join the sense of national purpose. It's easy to get swept up in the positive mood. However, there are some young people who sound a note of warning, arguing that the future needs to include other qualities too. I met one such person on a dusty field in Kigali as she put both of us through the trauma of a driving lesson.
Dida.
I don't even know how to put in.
You don't know how to put in the key. What am I doing in your car?
I don't know.
Am I safe?
You're not safe.
My name is Dida Sien Nibagwire. I'm an actress and playwriter. I'm 27 years old.
Clutch.
Would you say that you're a practical person? I can see from the way you're driving the car that you're clearly not.
I'm not practical anymore.
You need to change the gear at some point.
Number two.
I don't know where to take that thing.
I got the impression fairly quickly that Dida Sien, or Dida for short, is not exactly a techie kind of person. You don't let go of the steering wheel. And please keep your eyes on the road.
I have a degree in economics, but I'm not that person anymore. I gave up that to be into the arts, so I'm more artistic. All those cultural stories, they have those empowering elements in them. And maybe it's not true, but it has some sense of what's around you. It has some truth in it, and it gives you the dream to dream about your country. You dream and it becomes true.
Dida and Jesse both dream of a prosperous Rwanda, but the ideas of how it can be achieved are very different. Also different are their backgrounds. While Jesse had a comfortable upbringing, Dida's childhood was anything but.
Thank you for letting us into your house. How many of you live here?
5 people. My auntie, my little sister, my brother, and my nephew.
But when you say brother and sister, you actually mean your cousins?
Yeah.
Because you've grown up, you've been brought up by your aunt, who you really call your mom now.
Yeah, yeah. She came to pick me up at the Red Cross office because I was brought by a Red Cross. It was in 95. By then, I was 8 years old, and I was coming from a refugee camp in Congo.
How did you end up in the refugee camp?
During 94, in the genocide, me and my sister were hiding. We ended up in the city, in the southern province.
Hiding from people who were trying to kill you.
Yeah. And the killers came and took us and threw us in a toilet hole.
And you and who?
Me and my older sister. And then someone, a friend of hers, paid people, killers, to remove us from the hole.
I need to hear how you survived. Your sister carried you. Your sister took care of you, she stayed with you?
Yeah, because I was born in a really very small village in the southern province of Rwanda. We were a very big family.
How many?
10 children and my 2 parents. So when it started, they were telling people to go to the government offices to be protected. I would always cry when it would rain and saying that, why are we sleeping outside and we have a house? The genocide started in Kigali, mm-hmm. and it came in the other district, like, slowly. Mm-hmm. So that's where they killed my brother and one of my sister. And everyone ran away. We went to hide. The same day, they found us in the bushes. We were hiding and killed my mom and my 2 other sisters.
And they killed them while you saw them?
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
I'm amazed by Dida's resilience. Unlike Jesse, she's not religious, so it can't be faith that helps her through. Nor is it the promise of economic renewal. Instead, she says what reassures her is knowing her country's ancient and unchanging culture.
Hi, Dida.
Hi.
Why did you call me here? What are we doing here?
You're going to visit my friend and my mentor, Kawara. Okay.
What does she do here?
She has a culture center.
Right. And what's her name again?
Kahor Karimera.
Carol is someone that Dida worked with for 2 years, and she's clearly a big influence on her thinking.
She mentored me, like, in everything, working, acting, and she's like my big sister.
Is she?
Yeah.
And Carol, talk to me about the role of culture. How important is it?
Oh, I think it's part of everything. If we have been able to organize and do so efficiently a genocide is because the culture has been eradicated. The solution is among us, it's not outside, it's not looking at international communities or programs or systems to find a solution for our own problems. So we're trying to see how, thinking about, you know, the globalization and everything, we have everything in mind, but the first beginning point is us.
Mopeta, mwana w'umuhungu asohotse mu rugo, mama wavuye ku isoko.
Dida and Carol read poems to children at the cultural center, poems in the native language, Kinyarwanda. They're keen to ensure that Rwanda's newfound global ambitions do not dilute this ancient language, the culture, and even the sense of identity that it encompasses.
We should forget that we are French, English, or Portuguese speaking. This is not our culture first. I think our languages are much richer. I'm sorry for the BBC, but much more richer than English.
Don't worry, the BBC has many languages, obviously. Yeah. So I'm sure they understand that quite well.
We could speak Swahili. We can understand the same concept that we can't explain in English or in French. We are trying to speak three languages at the same time, Kinyarwanda, English, and French. So we are losing. Because now when we don't find the right concept or something in one language, we try to explain another.
Like when you're dealing with Rwandans,
yes,
they will understand Kinyarwanda.
Yes, but even Kinyarwanda now is suffering, especially among the young people now. People, they try now to translate English words or concept into Kinyarwanda and not the opposite. So now it starts to be part of the Kinyarwanda language, even though it's not the truth.
These seem to be two opposing visions of what Rwanda needs to be. In one, the country looks outwards to the wider world for its future, adopting international practices and expertise. In the other, the country looks inwards in order to put right the problems of the past.
It's not enough to have science and technology. People need more than that. They need to express themselves and share their feelings. They don't need to be somewhere in a box, trying to be that smartest person. Being able to interact with people, it makes you live. That's how our history survived.
We shouldn't be enslaved by our past, but instead start building our future and give a better legacy to future generations. So I'm thinking of an Africa that chooses what she wants to be. An Africa that builds her own future and her own present.
I'm just about to start writing computer code for the very first time ever. I've never done it before, and Jess is very kind, and she's agreed to teach me how it's done. What do you expect from me at the end of it all, Jesse?
I'm actually going to write an output on a sheet of paper. And I'm going to expect you to write a program that is going to give me that output.
What's an output?
It's what someone else who did not write the code can see.
Okay.
Not to self. Don't give up your day job, Alan. I was completely overwhelmed by Jess's techie session.
So you've gone into a
notes,
yeah,
just to show you the whole anatomy of an application.
Anatomy of an application.
I'm using simple language, Alan.
Okay. This is worse than algebra. I wonder whether there will be a time when it will be less complicated to write code, so that it's not just a reserve of a few people who understand complicated concepts like that.
I'm not totally a fan of that because you need to know the technology behind, you know.
But you do accept, though, that if it was a little more accessible by being easier, there'd be more people involved in it. Shouldn't code be in Kinyarwanda, for example?
Yeah, I know. Some people are actually working on that. But again, we would lack the innovation that we're looking for.
I guess the main lesson to take away is that in programming computers, like so many other areas of life, there are no easy shortcuts. But what Jesse went on to say surprised me. She told me Rwanda needs to develop technology its own way, not to make it easier, but in order to rely less on the outside world.
There are a lot of tools online that you can use with little programming knowledge, but those tools are not as customizable as you would want. It's very hard to take something that has been developed in China and adapt it to a sub-Saharan country. Sometimes it doesn't work. So you need to know how to do that. You need to have the how-to develop something that is in the right context.
And especially in a country that's developing like Rwanda, you need to be able to adopt ideas from other places and localize them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would come with you understanding the entire picture rather than
exactly
finding shortcuts.
Exactly.
And I imagine this is quite symbolic of what's happening in Rwanda, you know, the need for self-reliance, the drive to sort of find homegrown solutions to homegrown problems. Would you accept that?
Yes. Most of the writings about Africa and Rwanda have been written by foreigners. We need to own our own narratives. But it's the same thing for technology. Someone can just take something from Korea or from the US and bring it here. But it's always better when we own it because we know what it is going to solve.
Perhaps deep down, Jesse and Dida aren't that different after all. Like so many young Rwandans, they want to remain part of a unique and highly self-reliant culture, one that interacts with the world without ever being dominated by it. Rwandans hold their heads high, certain in the knowledge that their culture has existed for centuries, so it should continue for centuries more.
You know, talking to you, sometimes I do feel like we live in an almost ideal world, that nothing can actually go wrong. You're calm, you're cool, you're collected, you're difficult to ruffle, you laugh on cue, you only laugh when it's necessary, you barely smile, you're always serious, your hair is always neat.
Thank you.
What are the possible challenges you foresee? Come on, talk to me. Where are the problems? Because in your mind, in your world, it seems like everything is tick, tick, tick. Faith, everything is correct, everything is great.
Actually, in my world, everything is tick, tick, tick.
Yeah, but you're not nervous about teaching?
No.
You're not nervous about whether or not this course you're building is going to work?
Mm-mm.
You're not nervous about the possibility that it might actually be rubbish and it might not churn out students that are up to scratch?
Nope.
Jesse and Dida, just two of the millions of young Africans with powerful visions for the future. Visions based on the rich but sometimes tragic past and on the glittering potential of this vast continent. Next time on My Africa, how do young Africans interact with their parents over issues like getting on in life? Join me when I go to Tanzania to find out. Meanwhile, you can hear more from the BBC's Richer World season online at bbc.com/richerworld.